It's another thrilling episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. We're going to talk about the new movie Midnight Special with Michael Shannon and who's the female? Kirsten Dunst.
Kirsten Dunst has
Kirsten
a small
Dunst
part.
Kirsten Dunst and Joel Edgerton.
Yeah.
We're
going to
talk about 10 Cloverfield Lane, produced by J.J. Abrams and with John Goodman. And we're going to hear from J.J. Abrams. And who else are we going to hear from? Bill Brigoli?
Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Mary
right?
Elizabeth Winstead. So we're here with Bill Brigoli.
That's right.
And Bill McCuddy.
I'm not wearing any pants.
And our guest today is Logan Hill, who did our television show early today. Hi, Logan.
How you doing?
From Rolling Stone Magazine.
Good to be here.
And Logan's also going to tell us some stories. He has, he's been in the editing rooms of the new Star Trek movie. What is the name of the new Star Trek?
Star Trek Beyond.
Star Trek Beyond.
Going to places the franchise has never been before, they
wow.
say. We'll see.
Is it good places?
So far, I got to say, I was impressed. And, you know, the buzz on that trailer wasn't great. People were kind of sniping at the trailer. But I got to say, you know, I like Justin Lin. I like the Fast and the Furious movies. And I like the new reboot that's kind of more commercial.
Well, you know, the problem, actually, let's start talking about Star Trek before
sure.
we get into this.
I think we were.
Well, right, but I was going to just, like, as a tease, just tell you that it was kind of, but, you know, the problem with the Star Trek, look, I really like the first Star Trek reboot, the first one that J.J. Abrams directed,
mm-hmm.
Where, you know, the younger Kirk and the younger Spock and the younger Bones. Okay, but if you look at the last movie, you know, it really, if you're a Star Trek fan, it was an action movie. It was not Star Trek, and McCuddy and I always goofs on me for this, but they are cerebral, you know, science fiction stories, and
yes.
the originals were written by, they had great science fiction writers, and this was just, and this trailer for this new one, I don't know, you know, I don't want to judge a book by its cover or a movie by its trailer, looks like it's just one of these action movies and not really true to the Star Trek, you know, there's always...
Oh, yeah, and that was going around. When that trailer came out, you know, the Sabotage was on the soundtrack, they had Kirk jumping a motorcycle, and everybody said, oh, this is from Justin Lin, the guy who did Fast and the Furious. This is just going to be bikes in space, right? But if you go back and you look at the Abrams movie, the first one that you said you liked, you know, in the trailer for that one, there's a motorcycle. And there's the Sabotage song in the first scene.
He drives
reboot
a Corvette.
Has been built, yeah, the reboot's been built around expanding the franchise. And I do think that we're in this weird point with these global tentpoles, right, where a film like Star Trek, the old model of Star Trek, you got to admit, the movies sucked. Almost every Star Trek movie has sucked except for Wrath of Khan. And then they tried to remake that in the last one, Into the Darkness, by bringing the character back. And it felt like too much fan service.
Well, wait a minute. The new guy is throwing all these fancy terms around. Let's tell everybody what a global tentpole is. If you're just joining us, we're talking to
fan service.
From Rolling
is that something
Stone
you get at a nightclub?
No. It's not a nightclub dance, although I would like that. It means it's one of the big movies that's supposed to establish itself
yeah,
on
like
that weekend. And
Avengers. Batman, Superman,
right.
These huge movies. And what the interesting backstory behind Star Trek Beyond is, you know, you got to pick that date way in advance because you can only fit so many of these huge movies into any month, right? So they claim that date. This year's the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. They claimed that date years ago for this movie.
So that's where the tent pole comes. It's like we've struck a pole in the ground with a tent on it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Star Trek Beyond, and we own that weekend, and everybody else should stay away.
Yeah, and you know, and they had a different director. Roberto Orci was actually scheduled to direct this one. And, you know, who knows exactly what happened, but he was bumped out of the project, and they brought in Lin about 18 months before the release date. So he only had 6 months with Simon Pegg and some co-writers to write a whole new script, get in there and shoot. And now they've got about a year to get the script ready after shooting.
First of all, I take issue with you that all the Star Trek movies sucked. All right. Okay. The Wrath of Khan was a good movie.
Yes, the great
movie.
Star Trek
that was a great
4,
movie.
Where they go to San Francisco and they go back in time to present-day Earth with the whale thing. I don't know if you remember that.
It was
that was a good one. And Star Trek First Contact, which was a really, really... Which used the Next Generation cast, which is the... where they invented warp drive, which allowed them aliens from other planets did not want to have contact with Earthlings until we had developed the power to do warp drive, where we could actually travel faster.
You're right, Neil. It is very believable.
No, but it's a really good movie and a really smart movie.
You're right. And as Jay Leno said, who can argue with the writings of Socrates, Plato, and Nebulon from Planet 7?
Right.
They always did that on there. They would quote two real things and then go a third thing that you've never heard.
There are episodes of Star Trek, the original series, and The Next Generation that are brilliantly written.
Better than all the movies. Right, I would say better than all the movies except for Wrath of Khan.
Sitting on the Edge, which most Star Trek fans will tell you in the original series, it's probably the most highly regarded episode. It's called Sitting on the Edge of Forever. Joan Collins makes an appearance in the episode. But that's a tremendous... And there are so many episodes of The Next Generation that are just so thought-provoking and interesting, and they're great science fiction pieces.
Well, the good and bad news of that is the series was all over the map. So it was not... I wouldn't say rudderless. Well, they were that was an episodic show every week that had to come up with some new planet to land on or some new problem that they had to go out to.
No, that's not true at all.
No, I know they were on a voyage to the... But what I'm saying is you've got sometimes humor with little things like the Tribbles running around.
That's
and
a very old episode. That's a comedic, okay. A comedic episode.
I'm just saying, it's like all over the map.
Yeah, no, there's Deep Space Nine. There's all
racial,
these spin-offs
interracial kiss. So that was extremely
you're looking at the
important.
Original. I'm telling you that Next Generation employed a team of some of the best science fiction writers around, and there are episodes of that really rival the old Twilight Zone series, where you would go with Serling and you would go like, this is such a well-written, such a well-thought-out thing. And it saddens me to look at these J.J. Abrams Star Trek films, which are just kind of, you know, let's blow this up and let's blow that up. What is it like sitting in an editing room? I mean, since so much is CGI, are they just like...
Yeah, what did you see and what can you tell us?
It's fascinating. You know, there's some stuff I can't spoil, obviously, but I will say they're doing really interesting things with Idris Elba from, from Luther on BBC and the Thor movies. I mean, he's terrific.
So this is not Star Trek So White?
Yeah, no. No, it's not so white.
When you're
sitting in there,
well,
what's really amazing right now is the way movies get made in post. Uh-huh. You know, for a film like this, taking place on an alien planet, the whole idea for this one is they're going to destroy the Enterprise, right?
There's going to be done like 85.
No, not in this way.
Wait, you love the series?
Yeah, I know, but you know,
Where does it fall in terms of timeline? It's not a prequel.
It's a couple years in. You know, it's the 5-year mission. You know, to boldly go where we haven't gone before. So this is halfway through that mission. So the character wise, what they're talking about is you've been on a ship with these people in this small little place for 2.5 years, and those kind of resentments and those relationships are building, and those relationships are a little strained.
Does Chris Pine look more like Shatner now, 2.5 years later? Starting to do his speeches like this? Is he still in every conversation?
Hopefully we'll get there. But yeah,
edit room or are there like all these?
Oh no, it's fascinating. You know, Justin Lin works really fast. His kind of reputation in the business is he's a guy who can turn massive projects around very, very quickly. And he works from 9 a.m. to 2 a.m. in this office 5 days a week. Dude doesn't sleep. I talked to actors who've been on set with him, and they said he would show up on set, he'd film all day, 9 o'clock, everybody would go out to dinner, he would go into the editing bays, and he would sleep like, he's one of these guys who does like REM cycle sleep, so he either sleeps 1.5 or 3 hours a night, never more when he's on set.
Oh my God.
And he would be editing the sequences every night make sure he got what he needed. You know, this is a big job for him. He grew up watching Star Trek as a kid with his parents. He's got a real connection to it. But he would stay up all night editing, because if you don't get that stuff the next day with a cast like that that's so big and has so many moving parts, you miss it.
What was his first thing? What did he do before Fast and Furious?
He's a fascinating guy. He's a Taiwanese-American immigrant. His parents moved here and opened up a fish and chip shop in Anaheim. And the guy makes Better Luck Tomorrow, which is this terrific indie Asian-American film.
It was a sensational film. It was cute. It was a fun little bunch of guys.
Roger Ebert got in shouting fights about that film at Sundance because people were saying, it's irresponsible. These kids are misbehaving. And he said, hey, look, you wouldn't say that to Scorsese. You wouldn't say that to Spike Lee. You know, why does this guy have to represent the model minority? But it kind of put a chip on Lin's shoulder to do something different. I think that's why in the Fast and Furious movies, you know, like he really pushes
So when's
diversity.
It coming out?
This is coming July 22nd.
July 22nd. All right. Well, we'll be talking about it on the show. And... is the editing room, is it a huge screen that they're...
A huge screen. And then the thing is, he likes to have a lot of things going on at once, so he splits his team up. And he would have like 3 or 4 different rooms working on different scenes visually, 3 or 4 rooms working on the sound.
So what do you see? Does he go like, okay, cut that put that shot in?
He's doing that. They had a rough cut set, and it's to the point where he is such a meticulous guy. He's getting in there. He's looking at the thrusters on the back of the Enterprise and saying, the housing on that thruster looks too old-fashioned.
Really?
It's too rigid.
So what's the solution?
Or
were you also looking at screens that were half green because they hadn't had the effects put in yet?
Anytime you go on the set like this, obviously they're trying to like show their best stuff to you, right? Because you're only there for a day. So I'm not seeing the messiest.
Show me a crappy take.
Yeah, right. So I saw some stuff that was nearly finished that looked spectacular. I mean, Justin can really shoot action. And I also saw some stuff that was in the early stage of designing ships and things. Yeah, like when you see those big scenes of a city, they design every single ship and things like saying, oh, that's not going to contrast great. That gray ship isn't going to contrast great with the gray background. Let's change the color.
This is the problem to me in the movie business today, is that
too much attention to detail
to special effects and the way stuff looks. And I like it to look great, but it's really about the script, the screenplay, and the story. And that has become, forget about Star Trek, because I haven't seen the movie. Maybe it's a fabulous movie, but so many movies just, you know, the old movies that they used to make in the 30s and the 40s when the studio heads ran them, they would get top screenwriters and the script.
Simon Pegg. Simon Pegg's a great writer. He's hilarious. And I think this franchise has kind of brought back the humor.
But it's
and
all about
Simon's writing this one. I think it'd be funny.
Trying to get a shot right and an explosion right and an effect right. I'm saying get the script right. You know, yeah. I'll deal with one-tenth of the look of the film not looking as glorious as it is. If you could just give me really something that I could, you know, sink my teeth into mentally, and I could really get into the story.
Grandpa, can we move on?
I should plug, by the way, that story is going to be in Wired magazine this summer.
Oh, sure, okay. That's good.
Yeah. So anyway, let's look at some movies that are opening this week. Okay, one is called Midnight Special. Now, Midnight Special is about an 8-year-old kid who has mysterious powers. He's living on this in Texas amongst a cult that's headed by Sam Shepard. They think he's the savior, that he's the second coming. The government thinks that he's a weapon. And one of the powers that he has is his eyes light up like night lights, and he shoots like rays out of his eyes. And
he gives you a look. Boy, you're in trouble.
And he wears goggles. And his father, his biological father, is played by Michael Shannon. And he kind of like goes on the land.
99 Homes.
Right, 99 Homes and
Take Shelter.
Yeah, Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah, lots of stuff. A great actor. And he kind of kidnaps his own kid and goes on the lam to protect the kid from the government, who's trying to go after the kid.
Joel Edgerton from
Black Mass and many other things is this law enforcement official who's sort of siding with Michael Shannon. He's his friend, and he's helping Michael Shannon hide the kid. It is never explained why Joel Edgerton is. There's no backstory on Joel Edgerton's character, why he's helping.
Well, he's a state trooper, and for some reason, and this isn't given too much away, early on in the movie, he shoots another state trooper, which to me needed a lot of explaining. But I have to tell you.
Well, let me just finish this.
Yeah,
Adam Driver works for the NSA. For some reason, he's the only person that the kid is willing to speak to. And Kirsten Dunst is the mom who. The movie just, it's so slow paced. There's no backstory. I didn't care about the kid at all.
A lot of script here, though, Mr. I Need a Good Writer.
There's not a lot of script here at all. You know, the whole cult storyline is introduced early on and then just dropped. Writer-director Jeff Nichol, who made such movies as Mud and what's the other one?
Take Shelter.
It's long, it's drawn out, it's uninteresting, and it's tedious. It borrows from Close Encounters of the Third Kind. It borrows from Tomorrowland. It borrows from Iron Giant. But even unoriginality aside, I was just never drawn into the story. I never cared what was going on, and I never really knew why a lot of this was going on.
I was really drawn in. I was just kind of kicked out of the story later on. I mean, in the beginning when they start out, and it's Shannon, who's desperate and intense and terrific as usual, right? The guy's just great. He kind of had, you know, you see they're huddled up in these hotel rooms in this little car driving with the lights off, and he's
That's a cool scene.
He's a speeding down the highway in these night vision goggles. It's nice. You know, although I will say one of my favorite cliches about movies right now, I love it, is how there's always like poor people in movies who somehow end up with like these amazing classic
the
cars.
Chevelle, 66, yeah,
like, you don't have a
428.
Right? It's 2016. Right. You don't have a 1972 Chevelle, which is the car, because you're poor. You have it because you're a car collector.
Because they're 100 grand.
It's a movie. I love it.
What do you think of it, Bill Brigoli?
I had some of the same problems you did, just warming up to it in general. The kid is good, and Michael Shannon's good.
We should say the kid is from...
Jaden Lieberher, who's great in St. Vincent.
From St. Vincent. He's the kid from St. Vincent. And I preferred his performance much better in St. Vincent, but go on.
But he's playing a totally different character. He could not be that same kid in this movie. And Michael Shannon is good in that he is very scary and very intense, but the scenes with the kid, he's actually tender and nice toward the kid. Mm-hmm. So I like that part of it. I don't think they gave Ms. Dunst a whole lot to do.
No, and that's fine. You know what? And
why are they all dressing? All these people, like Kirsten, they're all dressing like.
Well, she's part of the cult.
Yeah, but why? So they're in the cult. They got to dress like they're like coming out of like some.
You get that. It's a cult thing.
Amish versus.
That's why you don't understand it. It's their cult.
It's the when you see these people dressing from these
James Bond henchmen.
No, these some of these I don't know Pennsylvania Dutch kind of.
Right.
Then they're Hasidim. Talk about how
they dress. Well, that's true.
I completely disagree with everybody on this. I think it's very original. I think the Tomorrowland the Tomorrowland reference is like, that's for like 10 seconds near the end of the movie. And I think that the performances by Shannon and this kid are so strong, and even Edgerton, are so strong that I was drawn into it, and I let it take me places that would have otherwise annoyed me.
And what I like about it, too, is this is a guy that makes really gritty Americana movies, and it was nice to see that sensibility applied to this sci-fi world, because I feel like so much, you know, we're talking about Star Trek and these other franchises, and they've gotten so big and so glossy. I thought it was nice to just see a guy hand over this film to some really good actors.
By the way, the light-up effect that you're so, like Village of the Damned a million years ago, is like very... not done that often in the film to become like annoying and obnoxious. He goes to that trough two or three times, and I think it's very effective.
I think I felt like I had seen this movie dozens and dozens of times before, done more effectively, done more interestingly. We talked about another movie on, you know, this movie was, believe it or not, inspired in part by Starman, the Jeff Bridges, Karen Allen movie, which is so much better, which is so much a better movie. I mean, Starman
is... They're different. I like them both.
Well, I don't know.
If you've seen this movie and like it, please tweet us. Talking
I find it unoriginal and boring.
It made me think. I interviewed Dan Harmon recently, and he told me this great line about Gene Simmons. He said Gene Simmons was looking at an old Kiss poster. It was like a real campy Kiss poster. And he said, no, we can't use that. Kiss is never in on the joke. And Dan Harmon told me, he said that became his rule for comedy, that he, you know, when he's on set and people are getting too ironic and too meta about it, he tells them, Kiss is not in on the joke.
I got it. That's his jump the shark moment.
Yeah, and I feel like sci-fi is a little bit like that, too. You got to really believe it and commit to it, and I did film did.
And it has to be true to its own world, because that's our rule on the show about sci-fi is don't set up rules and then break them. Mm-hmm. I just thought this was great.
Could you recommend this movie? Could you actually tell people to go out and see this movie?
Yeah.
Midnight Special?
Even though, I didn't warm up to it a whole lot, but I could tell people to see it. It's interesting.
Would you recommend it?
Yeah, I'd recommend it. I mean, do I think everything works? No, but I would recommend it.
Not me, man.
Would you recommend? And did you like the script of 10 Cloverfield Lane, since we're on the topic of sci-fi?
Let's start out with Cloverfield before we get to 10 Cloverfield Lane. Let me start off, although this is not the sequel to Cloverfield, although both have J.J. Abrams in common, speaking about, by the way...
And his marketing savvy.
By the way, Abrams is still the executive producer of the new Star Trek movie.
Absolutely. He went over to Star Wars, but he's still got a hand on
steering
the Enterprise.
Have you been to Bad Robot? Have you been to his office?
I haven't.
Santa Monica? It's supposed to be like
fantastic.
A giant toy room.
Yeah, I heard that.
John Goodman told me this long story about a year ago about how unbelievable it is.
He
would go there every day.
About that.
Oh, really?
It's just great that it's like a...
He loves it there.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's start out with 10 Cloverfield Lane. Okay, so...
So now we're not starting out with Cloverfield.
Well, let's go backwards. We're going to start out with Cloverfield Lane. Why don't you tell everybody what 10 Cloverfield Lane is about without ruining it?
It's kind of like Room... meets a doomsday scenario where John Goodman... Our computer's talking to us.
Wow.
See, you've got to stop hitting the buttons, Neil. You're not in charge. And here, of course, Logan immediately knows what to do.
There you go.
He's much more tech savvy than
that. Okay.
Turned off the speakers.
Nicely done.
Okay. Yes.
It's basically Room in a with John Goodman and Mary Elizabeth Winstead. And who's really good, I think, although some people think is kind of wooden. I thought she was great.
I always
And
liked
she's
her.
Kind of the Sigourney Weaver alien character in this film. She wakes up after a car wreck, doesn't know why she's in this bunker that John Goodman has dragged her to, and he says she's been handcuffed. Had that dream last night. So anyway, sorry, Mr. McCuddy, this is my job. So she deduces from Goodman that something has happened topside. Either aliens have attacked, the Russians have attacked, and there's germ warfare spread everywhere and they can't get out. She doesn't believe him at first, and then things start to happen where she maybe does.
And there's someone else in the bunker.
Yeah,
with
but him. I can't remember his name. There's a third guy in the bunker.
Right.
So for a long time I thought this was going to take like an Adam and Eve kind of a direction, and Goodman sort of on, you know, in charge of all of that. He's playing God. He is playing God in a way, but it starts to go in directions that I didn't expect, and I recommend it. My wife and I went to this like as a date night movie, knowing absolutely nothing about it, and I highly, as I tweeted out, go see this movie, then keep your trap shut.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but this is one of the few movies I'm actually really interested to see. I mean, this is the season of, like, you know, February, March movies where everything's kind of got mediocre reviews and you've already seen 15 trailers.
Yeah, and you expect it to be the toxic waste dump of no.
Yeah.
But now we sat down and talked to Mary Elizabeth, yeah?
Yes, and she talked about what was going through her character's head when she wakes up in that bunker.
There's this man there who's keeping her there and saying that it's for her own safety because there has been some sort of attack, a nuclear attack, and they can't leave. And you're kind of wondering if he's telling the truth, if this really happened, or if he's possibly a nefarious sort of man himself, and possibly she might need to escape.
And we've also talked to J.J. Abrams, who explains, and we'll talk about this after he finishes, how this fits into the Cloverfield universe.
It's a way of doing a series of movies that all share a certain kind of connection, and yet not feel like we are simply redoing, revamping, retooling, rebooting, but rather doing something original and hopefully frightening and entertaining.
That's interesting because it wasn't going to be 10 Cloverfield Lane at first, right?
They
changed that. I don't know.
The cellar.
Do you see really a correlation?
Well, there's a cute, cool thing that happens at the end of the movie.
I would have been perfectly happy if the end of the movie didn't happen quite like that either.
Well, yeah, my wife says I rewrite all the ends of movies for good or for bad. There's so much of this movie we can't talk about, including whether or not it has anything in common with the original Cloverfield, because we don't know what's happening above ground, and I really don't want to give too much of it away, but I really think Goodman is really good in this.
Goodman is good.
He's such a perfect crackpot.
I was thinking about this film that it's interesting. It's kind of like what's going on TV, and there's like so many different choices out there that brand names have become so important. And it's kind of interesting to think that the Cloverfield brand could almost become like anthology TV, you know, like American Crime or American Horror Story, where you just
visit
switch
different
it up every
stories,
time.
But have a like American Horror Story.
Well,
that's interesting.
Did the original Cloverfield, which I hated, did that make an enormous amount of money?
It wasn't unsuccessful.
It didn't make a lot of money,
but it cost nothing to make.
Right. Well, it was all that handheld. First of all, I hated the original Cloverfield. To me, it was 75 minutes. Which was too long to begin with no backstory on anybody, and it was just people yelling and screaming with that shaky handheld found footage camera.
It's supposed to be shaky. They're running away from a monster.
Okay, first
There's
of all,
no time for a steady
hand,
cam.
My hand to be
it
shaking.
Was so unrealistic. First of all, it was so unrealistic in the sense that you've got the world falling apart, you know, in Cloverfield.
It's a Godzilla movie. Of course it's unrealistic.
But people are going to be... let me stop and film this with my iPhone.
Oh, my God. If we had a monster here today, everybody would pull out their phones. I would pull out my phone right now.
I'd pull it out I'd put a kitty in it, and then I'd get more hits on YouTube than anyone else.
Maybe add a filter, like a golden filter to it or something.
They're running for their lives. So as they're running for their their lives. They're like, let me get the shot.
They think they're at the epicenter of the biggest thing that's ever happened in the history of the world. I buy that. I buy that.
And like, by the way,
as much as I buy that there's a giant monster, I buy that.
Running from the monsters. There's no other plot to speak of.
Best and use of found footage since Blair Witch. Best
no use character of found development
since Blair Witch. Yeah.
Most innovative monster movie we've seen in a long time, too. I mean, yeah. It's like all the monster movies.
They teased it.
Neil, what do you like?
All at once. It was cool.
Exactly. I remember when they were shooting this in New York, you know, and they had other names for the movie, and they were finding their casting notices and signs in the park.
There was no. Remember the trailers had no. You had no idea what the movie was about. It was like a throwback to the great old kinds of trailers.
You know what? I saw the movie, and I still had no idea what the movie was about, other than the fact that there was like a giant monster.
No story there, Grandpa.
That kind of was the movie.
I want a story. I mean, you know, really, what is so hard to have like a story? I mean, this whole movie.
If you've just joined us, Larry David has taken over the hosting of this show.
All it was people yelling and screaming with no backstory in any of the characters, and that got tiring after like 5-10 minutes. And I'm sorry, I like more to my movies than that.
It was taped over another piece of footage that keeps popping up. Didn't you find that chilling? Like people happy on a roller coaster and stuff. I thought that was awesome.
I thought.
And my building's in the movie. My building's bodega gets blown up.
Well, there's a reason alone to see the
freeze
movie.
Freeze frame. You can see me and the missus.
Hey,
the
why did you know? We talked last week about the Brothers Grimsby, and Bill and I liked it. We were laughing, all three of us. Bill and
apparently
I.
Apparently, we were the only two.
And you can't see that people didn't like it because nobody went to see it. It made like only it tanked. I mean, it absolutely bombed at the box office. Why do you think it bombed at the box office?
I'm going to go right out and say I have absolutely no idea, because these raunchy, gross-out comedies usually at least get a Friday bump and then plummet on Saturday. I have no idea what happened here.
Jimmy Kimmel.
They went on Kimmel, and they showed this footage that they couldn't show.
It was brilliant.
I thought it was brilliant, too.
What they did is they showed the audience this really crazy scene.
Now we know what that scene is.
With involving an elephant. And
a very aroused elephant.
Laughing hysterically. Which is a great marketing thing. And why did nobody go to see this movie?
They'd rather see a rabbit.
I mean, let's be honest, though. Sacha Baron Cohen, since Borat, has not had a reputation for quality.
Well, this is
he hasn't been in good things.
But
this is built around his reputation. He's the guy. The only reason you go see this movie is you want to see a Sacha Baron Cohen movie. That's the marketing pitch, right?
It also gave Donald Trump AIDS, which everybody talked about. I couldn't believe there wasn't a line around the block of just Trump supporters to yell during the movie. I couldn't believe it.
This movie, I don't even know if it's going to be playing this weekend. I mean, it just did so poorly that I mean, what did it make? $3.2 million, which is, you know, in the scheme of movies, I mean, I don't even, it probably cost more than that to
50
make.
50 or 60, you know,
oh,
they
it
gave Mark
more than
Strong,
that to market it. Yeah,
they gave, just P&I has got to be.
I mean, it's just really, I heard Howard Stern, again, I interviewed Sacha Baron Cohen, but of course, I got a 5-minute interview. He did an hour and a half, and he said, do you look at the box office? This was before the movie opened. He goes, do you care about that? And Sacha Baron Cohen said, only in the sense that if it makes enough movie that I'm able to make another movie.
Right.
And do you think that they're going to give this guy money to make another movie? I mean, this isn't just like, oh, it was a poor showing. I mean, this was just, you and I liked the movie. I mean,
right.
I thought it was very funny. This is such a terrible showing. Do you think that he'll...
Well, I'll say one thing. I think when you look at a lot of those R-rated comedies that have done really well, like you look at This is the End, the sort of Apatow world, you look at the Seth Rogen's world, Bridesmaids, but you look at those films, they're not built around one star anymore. I mean, you know, like this is the way comedy has kind of gone, especially R-rated comedy, is to ensemble comedies. You know, even Trainwreck was not really sold just on Amy Schumer. That cast was pretty stacked as well, with LeBron and all these other people. You know, I do think that, like, in terms of the way his next film gets produced, I'll be surprised if somebody says, we're going to sell this film only on your back.
I would disagree with that in the sense that I think the Trainwreck was sold. I mean, it was Judd Apatow who directed it, but it was an Amy Schumer vehicle. And I don't think that the... who's the guy from Saturday?
Bill Hader.
Yeah, I don't think he was the draw. I mean, you've got Mark Strong in this Brothers Grimsby thing. You know,
he's not a name. I mean, I love Mark Strong, but he's not a name.
He's
not
great
a
in it too. He's not as good as Jason Statham in Spy, and there's a lot of spy stolen stuff from that movie. In this,
is that an R-rated comedy? That's a PG-13 comedy, right?
That was R.
It was R.
Spy was R.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, I don't know. take if you're still out there.
I think Amy had a little more heat that was positive going into Trainwreck than
and she had
I think,
TV show and all this other stuff.
I think Sacha Baron Cohen has no heat now and just ice cold after
this.
Is
going
but,
to be, I agree. His future is going to be as a character actor.
Right, and he'll need like a Quentin Tarantino makeover or something.
Or how good
like
he was
in
Sweeney Todd.
Well, he said to me,
a character role.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what's going to happen to him.
When I interviewed him, he said that he was an idiot. That was his exact quote. He said, what happened was, he goes, right now, if you don't have a franchise movie, you know, like everything is about franchise movies. And they said to him when he was making Borat, you know, you should make, you know, once you do it and the cat's out of the bag, you can't do Borat anymore. I mean, this guy can't go anywhere as Borat and prank anybody because everybody knows who Borat is. But while they were filming Borat, they said you should spend another like 8 or 9 months doing more of these things so you could make 3 or 4 more Borat movies. And he said,
like Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I don't want,
would have been smart, actually.
Right. Yeah. And so, but he just decided he didn't want to go that route. But that would have, he could have released them every year and that would have
Speaking of idiots, where's the sound of that? Do you have any of that? Can we play some of that now?
Go to NY1.com and click on, you know.
So we can't even get you on our own show.
Well, I can give the tape to Bill Bergoli, and we can play that.
That's fine. I mean, yeah,
but you can go to
NewYork1.com.
You can go to NY1.com and type it
in quotes.
Put in Neil Rosen and put in the word put in Sacha Baron Cohen or the Brothers Grimm.
Yeah, this sounds easy.
It'll come up.
And then you turn the crank.
Right. Yeah. Hey, have you been watching that OJ thing, Logan?
Yes.
I'm loving it.
I mean, it's crazy. Ryan Murphy has just got the most bizarre freak show empire on television, and that guy can't do anything boring. And I gotta be honest, like I heard about the show. I thought this sounds like a terrible concept.
It's, right, I got hooked in right away. I just got hooked. It's awful. Like, what are you gonna tell me that I don't know? And everybody's in this thing.
It's amazing.
I mean, it's just like the guy the guy who plays Johnny Cochran.
Fantastic.
You know, it's what's his name?
Get your notes.
What's his name? He's playing Johnny Cochran. He's tremendous.
Well, you got Travolta, you got like David Schwimmer, the whole lineup of this cast is Sarah Paulson. Yeah. Sarah Paulson is just such a pleasure to see her in every single Ryan Murphy project.
Where she gets a new hairdo. Like, they get sort of hooked on all the press they're getting, but they can't pay attention to what they kind of do. And she walks into the courtroom and they give her the thumbs up.
Yeah.
Darden
exactly,
gives her
right?
the thumbs up or something. Yeah, it's like that I thought was cool.
Those little notes make it feel like something more than, like, you know, we just watched that biopic, the program about Lance Armstrong, and it didn't have any of those little odd moments like
Courtney
that.
Right.
Those surprising touches.
Courtney B. Vance.
Yeah,
plays,
Courtney B. Vance.
Johnny Cochran is great. And the weakest link is actually Cuba Gooding Jr.
I agree. Like, he's not good.
Not a great OJ. But it's, first of all, they're up to like episode 7 now.
Yeah.
And I'm watching them on FX, which is the network that runs this thing, sent me a link to some future episodes. There's 10 episodes I've seen.
We'll put that link on our website so all of you can go there.
They've released 9 of them. There's one episode that's coming up where it's just about the jury, and not when they're deliberating. You know, they were sequestered for like 8 or 9 months. And it's just fascinating. You know, they won't let them watch television. They won't let them read the newspapers. They're quarreling amongst themselves. There's a whole, like, race issue within the jury. Like, they go, okay, we've cleared an episode of Seinfeld to watch tonight, and we've cleared an episode of Martin. You know, all the black jurors are like, we want to watch Martin. And all the white jurors are like, we want to watch Seinfeld. And there's more black jurors, so they get to watch Martin. And there's all this, there's this hostility within the jury. And it's just very, very interesting. So you would think that, you know, you would know everything about this trial, mm-hmm. but the performances are great. And Schwimmer is as Kardashian.
It's just having that undercurrent of the Kardashians and the weirdness of L.A.
He's got them as kids.
Logan's absolutely, you see their asses when they're tiny. I agree with Logan that only somebody like Ryan Murphy could bring a fresh perspective to all of this. And now if you look at all the projects he's done, they're all successful, mostly, and they all have his stamp on him in a way that, you're right, it's a story we thought we'd known. Almost the way the Steve Jobs movie was made, from a completely different perspective. Like, show me something I haven't seen before. And that's why OJ isn't really the center of this thing. Yeah, he's in it, but it's all about everybody else, and about the fame that happened unexpectedly to all these people, about what an idiot Edo was.
Took this case and they made it about something else. And like, it shows you this dream team, lawyer team, which is F. Lee Bailey, played by Nathan Lane, and Courtney Vance playing Johnny Cochran.
And how it's a runaway train, or in this case, a runaway Bronco, that really kind of turned
Travolta
into...
Travolta's great as
Travolta's tremendous.
As, what's the guy's name, the lawyer's name?
I can't remember his name.
Kardashian. Yeah,
Robert Shapiro.
Travolta, who also gets a producer credit on this, he's tremendous. He's like this egomaniac who just wants to get the credit, and he's also...
Is Ryan Murphy a Scientologist?
I don't think so. But just like the level of difficulty to get that cast together, to like pull off a gamble like this, it's amazing. And to do it with swagger.
Well?
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, I think it's one of the, on, you know, social, on Twitter and Facebook and stuff, it's one of the most discussed shows of the season. You know, I like that, like, he doesn't just follow the story. You know, everything Ryan Murphy does, he's leading. He's not just sort of chasing the facts and trying to get it right. You don't get the sense from that show that he's, like, nervous that he's going to get something wrong. He's bringing this, like, complete cocksure kind of bravado to the whole thing.
Now, I will say there are a couple of websites that go through it episode by episode and go, here's what's wrong. You know, that didn't happen exactly this way. It happened that way.
There was one network that actually, after I watched an episode, they showed you the exact scenes that you saw in the episode. Like, Marsha Clark says this, and Mark Furman says this on the stand, and, you know, Johnny Cochran says this, and then you watch this in the episode with the actors playing them, and then they show the actual lines.
Court footage?
What's that?
They show court footage?
Yeah, the actual footage. And this Judge Ito guy comes across, is just, which we all knew anyway, I mean, allowing cameras in the courtroom, but he's like, he's all excited, he's like, look, I have an autographed picture of Arsenio Hall. Like, he's
Remember they had the dancing Itos on Leno?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's right.
When else would you be able to get away with that unless at the time he was seen as such a buffoon?
Yeah. I know.
It's almost like Sarah Palin today. That's how you'd have to equate it to audiences that don't remember.
Also quite good. Maybe we'll talk about this next week. I think Better Call Saul is just tremendous. I mean, Breaking Bad is my all-time favorite show, one-hour drama on television. And this is just, it's kind of like Breaking Bad, the sequel, and done great. It's just wonderful. And Bob Odenkirk
is phenomenal.
I'm late
to that party. I love Bob.
He's great.
Very funny. Been around a long time.
The whole thing is just what. So if you're a Breaking Bad fan, really just go watch Better Call Saul.
Yeah, I was late to that one. I started season one a couple weeks ago, and now I'm just
the guy who plays Mike.
Oh, man. Mike Ehrmantraut is so great.
What is that actor's name? Jeez.
He's absolutely fantastic. And yeah, I feel
Neil's
like...
Neil's iPhone is working overtime.
Yeah, I know. Well, I want to give the guy credit,
the
you know what I'm saying? The guy's name from Better Call Saul...
Is it another comic? Is it somebody who's like...
No, it's Jonathan Banks.
Jonathan Banks.
And he's great.
He's so great in Breaking Bad.
I know. The whole thing is tremendous. I highly recommend Better Call Saul. I mean, I watched the episode...
Has your Louis C.K. show gotten any better? Your on-demand one?
No, Horace and Pete, I got to tell you, like, I paid $5 for the first episode, and it was great. And then I went to the second episode, and it was still good.
Was it still $5?
No, then I went down to $2, and now they're all leveling out at $3, but I haven't bought the last few.
Well, everyone listening, let's get a telethon together and let's get some money into Neil.
I wonder how that experiment is going to play out, though, because I saw him on Jimmy Kimmel.
Well, I think it would be a huge hit if it was a huge hit. It's like, you know, Steve Martin's thing about How to Be a Millionaire. Start with $1 million. I mean, if you have a great series that everybody wants to see, I think selling it one episode at a time is a brilliant idea. And Louis C.K. found that out with comedy specials. But you need something that's so hooky, or as we say in the world of social media, sticky. You have to stay. You can't.
Right.
Not
There's nothing hooky
it.
In this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is not The Walking Dead, where like people are lost, where they're like, oh my god, I got to, or an episode of 24, where you go, I just got to see what happens.
I think it's a stupid, stupid move. I think he was so smart to do it with his comedy shows because he just cut out the middleman. But this TV is something where you need the middleman. I mean, everything.
Well, that's what he said on Kimmel. He goes, I miss the network now.
Yeah.
You know?
Everything else in television has gotten easier. It's easier to watch your shows than ever. And this is the one show that's hard to watch.
Series.
Right.
When, you know, there's so much stuff on television. I mean, there's so much content on Netflix where, you know, if you just get a Netflix subscription for a month, what is that?
That's like 4 months of Netflix.
Right. You know, and there's all these original series on Netflix. And then there's all these original series now on Amazon. I just watched that one, The Man in the High Tower, which was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So why would you spend $30 to watch all these, you know, for something that there's, as you said, McCuddy, there's no... There's no cliffhanger.
Right.
There's nothing where, like, oh, my God, I got to see what happens, you know? Is it interesting? Yeah, I don't know if it's worth the money. It was.
Let me ask you this, and then I know it's late. We have to go. If you had to pay every week, if he had done Louis that way, would you be buying Louis every week?
I love Louis. I just love Louis. Would I watch? Would I pay it every week? Yeah, I'm a sucker. For a dollar, I probably would.
See,
know?
I wouldn't. I know that I'm lazy. You know what I mean? Like, I've gotten so lazy about watching TV that I don't even turn on the regular TV most of the time. Because then you got to find what channel the thing's
right.
on or whatever.
You're
I just go to Netflix.
I have one like you at home. She's 15 and her name is Lily. They don't watch any television. I'd pay for Archer. That's my last.
Yeah.
Next week, on Sitting Around Talking Movies, Batman v Superman. Batman versus
Superman. Is it a legal movie?
What?
Who's
going to
win? Is it a legal movie? Is it about lawyers? Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, and my big fat Greek wedding too. Aye. Along with interviews with the cast of my big fat Greek wedding too. And we'll talk about other stuff as well. You know, why don't you tweet us? You know, and I'll start reading some comments over the air, questions to
us. I mistakenly put out at TalkingPixOD, but really we want people to tweet at SA.
Right. You could watch. This is the after show to Talking Pictures, which is on New York One locally in New York City and nationally on Time Warner Cable. But we have a Twitter site, and it's SA, which is, stands for Sitting Around, if you want to remember that. So it's SA Talking Movies. And tweet us, and we'll if you know you come up with an interesting question, we'll discuss it and we'll answer it on the air. And we also have a Facebook page, Sitting Around Talking Movies. You could contact us there as well. And
particularly if you loved Cloverfield, and you don't believe,
or if you
King
see
Kong
Midnight
is a very
Special
good movie from 1933.
You see Midnight Special and agree with me and say, yeah, you're right, Neil. These guys, they don't know what they're talking about. But
no, you don't have to tweet that. But if you do agree with me that it's a good movie.
Well, for Bill Brigoli,
yes,
Bill McCuddy.
I'm still wearing no pants.
Our guest, Logan Hill.
I have pants.
And myself, Neil Rosen.
For the record.
We'll see you next week, and thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. Oh, by the way, before we go, Bill, you didn't say your signature line. What do we do every week on the show?
We watch the bad movies so you don't have to.
We do. We'll see you next week.